part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
Well, no, first let me apologize because we were supposed to do this interview yesterday and me, like a bonehead, something came up in my house and I actually had to change the thermostat yesterday morning and I left Gabe hanging. So I will publicly apologize to you, Gabe. I am so, so sorry. I think in the 9 years that I've been doing this podcast, you may be the first person I ever forgot to jump on the line with. I'm not exactly positive about that, but I don't know.
It's all right. I appreciate it. I appreciate you rescheduling me like this, and it's all right. I understand that, you know, stuff comes up and it's things, you know, need to be handled in an emergency and things like that. I completely understand. So,
no, Gabe, but, no, you should be cursing me out and saying like I'm an awful human being and just be like, what is wrong with you, Christian? Because that's how I felt after I saw the emails and I was like, oh my God, what did I do? So again, I apologize. And I should say that the person I have on the line, well, first, this is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast and my name is Christian Horn. And I have Gabe Chang on the line, correct? I got your last name correct? Please tell me.
Correct.
It's always a lottery with me. So great. I got it right. And I also like to also right off the bat, that's two alsos, when somebody has a Kickstarter and they've come on my podcast, to let people know that that is why you are on with me. You have a Kickstarter going right now, correct?
Correct. It's starting March 17. I don't know when this
this will go up the morning of March 17th or whenever your Kickstarter launches. So on the day of.
Yep.
So technically right now it is not up as we are speaking, but for the listeners, it is up. Or
it is.
So, you know, we should talk a little bit about that, obviously, but you're a comics creator. This book is a spinoff of another comic, correct? Called For Molly.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm sorry. Continue.
Oh yeah. Okay. So my comic For Molly, it's a limited series. It's a 4-chapter book and the 4th chapter I'm going to be doing the Kickstarter for in summer of this year. But in the interim between, chapter 3 and chapter 4, I decided to write a 1-shot short story spinoff called Into the Wilderness, which is what I'm Kickstartering for right now.
Yes.
It's a standalone comic. You don't have to have read For Molly in order to appreciate Into the Wilderness. It's not a sequel or a prequel. It's its own spinoff using some characters from For Molly. Mm-hmm. And as an added benefit of contributing to the Kickstarter, when we reach the goal, every backer at every level will get For Molly parts 1 through 3 for free digitally. So backing Into the Wilderness, you'll not only get that short story, but you'll also get For Molly. So it's kind of a package deal in that way.
That's awesome. I mean, you sent me a copy of Into the Wilderness and I read it. And I think this is, I mean, it's a lovely book. What is the artist's name? I don't want to mangle her last name.
Her name is Elisa Menegel.
Menegel. Okay, great. Because reading is fundamental and I cannot read last names. I'm terrible at it. But no, I mean,
I was a high school teacher for 7 years. I've changed career since then, but I was so bad with names.
Yeah.
And it was the worst when the kids wouldn't correct me. So I would call them like a mispronunciation of their name or something that like it was their first name, but they went by with their friends their middle name or something like that. They would never correct me. So I'd call kids like Emmanuel, like all year long. And they'd be like, oh yeah, like my name is actually like people call me Jorge or Javier or something like that.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Come on, kid. Like, just tell me what your name is.
Yeah, so exactly.
I'm equally bad with names.
Yeah. No, I will say publicly I am terrible with names. I will meet people just in discourse, and like 10 minutes later, I'm like, what was that person's name? I will be talking to them for like 15 minutes and thinking, yeah, like, what is this person's name? Like, I've totally blanked out. So if you ever meet me at a convention and I'm like talking to you and you see this stare on my face like I'm thinking of something else, I'm probably trying to remember your name, and it's just an awful thing. I know I'm an awful human being, and there are a lot of memory exercises I've tried, but anyway, we're not here to talk about my awful memory. We're here to talk about Into the Wilderness and your wonderful comic, which I think it is. I think it's really, I mean, visually, it's really beautiful. I really like the art style. And I think that, you know, it's a really like cute, I mean, it looks cute, but there's, you know, some seriousness behind it. Yeah. And unfortunately, I had not ever been exposed to For Molly before. So, I mean, I read the synopsis in your email, but it's a bit different when you open up, you know, the comic to read it and there's a talking dog in it. And I'm like, the dog is talking. Like, it's not like a telepathic dog, or it's not like he's literally opening his mouth and like talking, which in comics should be fine, you know. But right, for me, I was just like, oh, this is cool. And so I think we should, you know, you could talk a little bit more. It's a kind of like a post-apocalyptic thing, right?
Yes and no. It's not post-apocalyptic, but it is an off-the-grid society, an okay, off-the-grid kind of world where humans and dogs that speak are living off the grid in the New Jersey forest.
Nice.
Yeah. So For Molly, the synopsis is an antisocial talking dog named Molly who is living alone in the New Jersey forest, helps a recently divorced outsider rescue his sister from a hidden evil. So the story is unrelated to what's going on in Into the Wilderness, but it takes place in the same world. Uh-huh. And there's an explanation in For Molly, an explanation that's not an explanation in For Molly for why the dogs talk,
okay,
which is where in the first issue, Greg, the main character, meets Molly, the other main character, and he is first realizing that she is able to talk, and he's surprised, and he says, you know, I was surprised. I've never met a talking dog before. And she responds, sure you have. They just didn't want to talk to you. So
that's great. So it's not a Son of Sam thing either. I mean, that's the first thing that pops into my head.
It's not a dynamic possession. No, nothing like that.
Nothing like that. No, these are very friendly dogs. Very sort of, I mean, a little bit of intimidating looking, but also cute, but it's not like you're sort of cartoon animal either, like with the white gloves on or anything like that, right? I mean, these are
right.
These are they're sort of like walk on all fours and that sort of thing, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Not personified. They're not like goofy. They're more like Pluto, I guess.
I guess the Disney
analogy.
What is Goofy? What is like? Yeah, that's the age old question. What is Goofy? But so it's funny, the couple of things that stood out to me when reading your synopsis and just listening to you talk about it is that you were very much like in New Jersey. And it's funny, yeah, because I'm originally from New Jersey. I live in Los Angeles. I actually grew up mostly in the town of Leonia, which is where the Vision and Scarlet Witch are supposed to be living.
Oh,
but,
okay.
Yeah, no. So
I grew up in West Windsor, so in the shadow of Princeton University, as I like to
say. Oh, nice.
Yeah, Central Jersey.
Did any of Princeton rub off on you? Did you go there or?
I did not. And my brother, who's the smarter one, went to Penn. So we were rivals. He was had the Princeton rivalry and brought that to the family. So I remember going to a track camp there where it's a beautiful campus. And if you watch the movie, Beautiful Mind, you see parts of the campus that are kind of older that are really nice.
Yeah.
But no, I don't have any like strong affinity to the university.
Gotcha. But you seem to have an affinity for New Jersey, I would imagine.
I do. I do very much.
Are you currently located there
I've been in Southern California since college. So I went to UC Riverside and now I live in LA.
Gotcha. Oh, that's funny because when I moved to California, I was like, I never want to come back to Jersey again. I was just like, I was so done with it. But no, I don't dislike Jersey now. I've grown up.
Yeah, I don't dislike it either. It's a great place to say that you're from.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think Jon Stewart might have helped me appreciate it more when he became sort of and was proud of being from Jersey. And I was like, oh, it's something to be proud of? Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, but so the book is set in New Jersey. But sorry, going back to the setting, though, is it in the future or is it like a present alternate universe? That's sort of where I'm, because, you know, the dogs speak. Obviously, we've kind of nailed that down. But what I'm trying to figure out is because one of the characters in here, you know, he's an archer and it looks like they're sort of living in like a rural society. So is it set in like, because I wasn't exposed to it for Molly. So I don't know. I'm going in blind as far as to like the world setting.
No, it takes place in the current, the present.
Okay.
But the thing about, I mean, when I was writing for Molly, I thought it would be really cool if, you know, the backstory of what's going on in the world outside of the story, or that's kind of led up to the stories in both comics, is that there was a territorial war between the humans and the talking dogs in the forest. That was kind of, it's all kind of a hidden world that's taking place under our noses. Oh, normal okay. life is happening outside of the forest.
Gotcha.
And there's another line that kind of explains that in For Molly, where the two characters, Greg and Molly, are walking in, again, an explanation that's not an explanation, but Greg and Molly are walking in the forest and he says, oh, should we, like, is it fine? We're out in the open like this. What if somebody sees us? And she says, like, yeah, it's fine. Like you're just a guy walking in the forest with a dog. This is New Jersey. Nobody cares. Like,
interesting.
So, but yeah. So when I was writing this story, and I was coming up with the world, and I was thinking about the backstory of it. There was a kind of a territorial war that happened between the dogs and the humans that ended in what's called the Harrisville Truce. Harrisville which is a real abandoned mill in New Jersey in the Pine Barrens. Yeah. So the truce outlines the kind of the peace that takes place, that exists between dogs and humans in the forest, so that they're allowed to coexist. It establishes the Advocates Guild, which is the peacekeepers that are it's a dog and a human that are partnered up, that kind of investigate crimes, deal out punishments, and just generally kind of protect people in the forest,
yeah.
Just from whatever's out there. And that's what the two main characters of Into the Wilderness are, Schneider and Caprica. They're both advocates. But it also, the Harrisville Truce outlaws the use of firearms and explosives, because it's not really like a fair fight between a person with a gun and a dog that doesn't have an opposable thumb. So,
gotcha.
So it outlawed, and, you know, just for the reasons that it just looked cooler to have characters that have swords and all the advocates have bows and arrows and people have to fight hand to hand. Whereas if you introduce a gun to a story, then suddenly it becomes a completely different story. And it's,
sure.
it's all just about, you know, lots of panels of people taking cover and and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the explanation for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I appreciate the archery aspect of this book because I'm a big Hawkeye fan from Marvel, and at least from the 80s, like how he was growing up reading comics, he was like a favorite character. And these days everyone's just like, why the bow and arrow and blah, blah, blah. So I really enjoyed like that aspect of it. I mean, I think this is a really like neat book. I'm going to have to check out For Molly too, or at least contribute for the whole set when the Kickstarter launches, which again, it is up now if you're listening to this podcast. But so Into the Wilderness though has a completely different set of like lead characters, correct? Than For Molly?
Yeah, I was writing For Molly, and these two characters, Schneider and Caprica, who are advocates, they appear in the book. They have an important role in the book, and so I had this whole backstory for them where Caprica is a dog, she's a border collie, and Schneider is this is a human who was living in New York, but decided that life wasn't very fulfilling. Oh. And then went into the New Jersey forest to live off the grid. He almost died in a snowstorm. Then Caprica came and saved him. And because of his background, he was kind of, I always thought of him as being kind of a military police officer that then became an attorney in New York City.
Huh.
So because of his background, he becomes an advocate, which is what Caprica already is, and she's kind of his mentor, his the older veteran cop of the partnership. So I came up with all of that backstory while I was writing For Molly, and sure, none of it is in For Molly. So,
oh, gotcha.
It was like, oh, okay. So, I guess I should. And so the idea of writing them as their own, in their own story, kind of came up because I had all this information in my head and because I really love these characters, where I was like, okay, I feel like I have a story to tell for these two.
Yeah. 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 Oh no, that's great. Like spinning off side characters. I mean, is For Molly, was that like a self-published book that you went through Kickstarter, or was that, because I know that looking you up, I know that you write reviews for Fanbase Press. Did they publish your book, or was it just self-published, or?
No, For Molly self-published is okay. is my first book. After I left teaching I'm starting my second career in entertainment, and I decided to start writing and doing the self-publishing route with the comics. Gotcha. So yeah, For Molly is self-published, and I'm sorry, I forgot your original question.
No, I mean, I guess that was just sort of it. That was where was For Molly like published, or what company was it published through? But you're basically saying that you're self-published. So you're like, you were hitting the convention circuit and all that, and raising money on Kickstarter and that sort of thing, I'm assuming, before the awful year of 2020 hit.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit. Yeah, and I have it's funny that you mentioned that things have stopped. I mean, I felt like I was having trouble. I didn't feel like I was quite comfortable doing the conventions yet. I jumped into doing it. I only had one book at my table, so the pandemic really gave me the opportunity to, because I was working from home, because a lot of things were closed and slowed down, to really just like, to re-strategize what I wanted to do with my self-publishing,
sure,
which involved writing a lot of one-shots. Okay. and changing my strategy from doing one big Kickstarter a year to doing multiple small Kickstarters a year, and trying to build up an audience that way. So as I transit, so For Molly is almost done. I had the fourth chapter coming out at the in the summer of this year. And I did a Kickstarter for a smaller book, a 9-page one shot in the fall of last year. I'm doing this one shot this year. I'm going to do another one shot after For Molly is done. I'm building up a collection of short stories to publish as an anthology of my own, an anthology of short stories that I'm going to create. So,
World? Oh, sorry.
No, this is going to be the only one that's kind of the continuation of For Molly. And really just because I hadn't planned it that way, but just when I had written the entire script for For Molly and I sat down and looked at how many pages Snyder and Caprica were in, I was like, oh, well, you know, that seemed really low page count. So, so that's why I decided to jump into doing this one. It's all going to be different stories, different takes on different sci-fi or fantasy tropes. I'm navigating the self-publishing world. I'm trying to figure that out because I'm still relatively new at this. I just started in 2017.
Gotcha. That's considered new? No, I understand. I mean, I have my own like little comic that I've been trying to put together for years and years and years, and just find the time to write and do it and all that stuff. And it's funny that for you, 2020 kind of became a bit more productive, whereas for me, I think I was one of those people that kind of just shut down and was like batting down the hatches. Do we all have jobs? Are we going to pay the mortgage? Like just focus on my day job mostly and this podcast, because for me, quite honestly, this podcast is something pleasurable and easy to do and was a way to connect with people, you know, when we're all sort of like stuck at home. That's great. I find that's a really terrific result of what turned out to be or a terrible year for a lot of people, you know, I mean, let's just say it, but that's good that you were able to pull something good out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, I completely understand where you're coming from though, where it's just like, an importance on making sure that everybody's safe and making sure that everybody's healthy and focusing on what's going to be, I mean, because I have a podcast as well.
Yeah. Tell people about your podcast. Say it.
Oh, I didn't mean to get off this tangent, but yeah, it's called Another Lousy Millennium. It's a Futurama fan podcast. So we go, me and my brother are the hosts, and we go episode by episode, analyzing, summarizing, and quoting every episode of Futurama. We've just recorded the finale, like the series finale. So we've done all the episodes.
Oh,
we're still publishing the end of the 10th season. But yeah, we are we're finishing up Futurama.
Oh wow!
And it's been a lot of fun.
How does that feel?
It feels like a crazy accomplishment. I mean, like, I feel like I want to like get transcripts of all of the podcasts that we've done, and then just like go to like, I don't know, UCLA or USC and like slam it down on somebody's desk and be like, I deserve an MFA in Futurama. Please give it to me.
That's
look
awesome.
At all this work that I have done. It's a huge accomplishment. And I'm very proud of it. I'm very glad that I was able to do it with my brother. And we've had a lot of fun, and we've learned a whole lot from doing it. So it's been a really great experience.
That's awesome.
But that was, I mean, one of the things that like we buckled down on, and it was important to keep us sane, to keep us feeling like we were still connected to people and still keeping us feel normal, because we'd been doing it before the pandemic. So I completely understand where you're coming from when you're talking about.
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, just this podcast, doing a podcast, you live in Southern California, right? I mean, for me, LA is such a, and it's become more and more evident as 2020 went on, and just it's funny because like you start thinking about like before 2020, and now it's like we're sort of coming out of the haze, and it's like, do I want to go back to like before 2020? Like, I mean, it's going to be great to be able to go out and, you know, eat at restaurants or whatever and feel safe. But then there are also aspects of like, well, I didn't like this about my life before, but the podcast for me has always been a way to trick my friends. I'll use the word trick into coming on and just talking about nerd stuff, you know, because in LA, it's not like New York or even New Jersey, wherever, you know, you live, where it's like you have to drive everywhere and it's so far to get places, and it can be hard for people to get together. And so the podcast for me is a good chance to connect to like people like you, who I have not met and seem like very nice people and very creative and, you know, with really great projects. And then it's also, like I said, a chance to get together with people who like the same things. And, you know, we just hash it out, you know, like WandaVision or Superman and Lois, like we just did. So that's great that you did that with your brother, you know, Futurama. And, you know, that's fantastic. Did Matt Groening ever get in touch with you? Does he know about your podcast or? Or is
no,
it Groening? Groening?
I think it's Groening.
Okay.
Groening.
I totally massacred that.
It's okay. Our Twitter, which is at ALM Pod, is followed by a couple of the voice actors.
Oh, that's great.
And they have, they've retweeted a couple of things that we posted, or they've commented on a couple of things that we posted, but that's kind of as far as we've gotten. And we're also followed by a couple of the writers.
Sure. So
they have liked or retweeted some of it, but that's kind of as far as we've got. We're hoping that now, like I said, we're coming to the end of Futurama. So we're hoping that our next project that we're doing, which is going to be a little bit more TV agnostic, not just still focused on TV, but not on one specific series.
Sure.
Is going to get some more attention and hopefully get us some more guests.
Have you ever attempted like to maybe write for Futurama comics or something like that? Or like, I think, is Bongo still in business? Like Bongo Comics, the ones that were doing all the Simpsons books? Or did that disappear once sort of like Disney bought Fox? I mean, I don't even know.
I believe that they still exist. I think that maybe the Futurama comics existed up until recently, or they're still going. They might have been acquired or assimilated or whatever that word is into the, you know, the Disney
absorbed.
Was the word.
Yeah.
I'm still, like I said, I'm still pretty new on my journey, and I'm probably moving a little bit slower than a lot of other people, but like, so I'm not like,
you're not slower
I'm not,
than
like,
me, buddy. I am the tortoise.
Well, you've worked with, who published Baby Badass? Was that
Action Lab, Danger Zone?
Action Lab, right?
But you know, I can't take full credit for that because that is mostly my friend Dave Schrader's like impetus, and he's, you know, I helped get the idea, like basically off the ground, but he's pushed that forward because he's that tenacious guy that will, you know, and
right.
and I'm busy with work and kid and, you know, and other things, this podcast too. But yeah, no, I mean, I've worked with Action Lab, but I wouldn't say that I can't fully take credit for that. You know what I'm saying? Other artists worked gotcha. On it. And so when it comes to my own journey, as far as like making my own comics or my own thing, which is called The Periwinkle Puss, you know, there's only ever been one issue. And I started working on a second early last year. And then, like I said, it was like batting down the hatches. Like, are yeah. we going to have jobs? Or am I going to be able to feed my kid? Are we all going to get sick? Like, are we going to drop dead and come back as zombies? Like, you know, nobody yeah. knew, you know, anything. So there was just a lot of stress. And I was definitely one of those people. I don't seem like it to a lot of people, but sometimes, you know, have the inner anxiety. And it just was like, yeah, I don't know that I can focus on this right now. I just have to focus on like keeping my job and, you know, making sure everything's okay. So you are way ahead of me. And from what I can see from this book, you know, I mean, you're putting out good stuff. So, I mean, I can't, you know, I wouldn't complain as to your journey because it, I mean, Into the Wilderness looks like a really, really neat book. And, you know, I should say, if I haven't said it before, I've said go to Kickstarter, but you should support it with your money because this looks like a really like fun, you know, one shot. So, and this is all you're planning for this? Like, what if it takes off? Like, what if you raise a bajillion dollars with Into the Wilderness and you're like, oh my God, like people love these characters. Would you have more stories to tell?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, well, for one, I think it would be a great lead into the end of For Molly, which is the end of that story. I've kind of just in my wandering thoughts thought about like, okay, what would I do if I were to pick up these characters again?
Sure.
But because For Molly is kind of an expression of not just the time that I wrote the original script, but like everything I've kind of learned in my initial journey from taking that script and self-publishing it. You know, it's my first comic, like I said. I think that like I would like that to be kind of a at least for me, kind of like a time capsule of like, okay, this is my first comic. You know, the Schneider and Caprica characters are, like I said, characters that I love probably as much as Greg and Molly in For Molly. So like, if this were to blow up, I am not against, you know, continuing to tell that story because I think that, I mean, like Into the Wilderness is a different story from For Molly because it's essentially my homage to Batman the Animated Series, and yeah. I use the word homage because you know it sounds nicer than total ripoff. In the animated
well, this
series.
Isn't a total ripoff. I mean, I look at it and I thought like animated style a little bit, like looking at yeah. the artwork. And as to whether Alyssa thinks that's a good thing or a bad thing, you know, I apologize or accept the compliment. You know, however you want to, you know, because I know that some people are like, oh, and they don't. Yeah, I'm not that type of person, but there are people who are like, oh. Animated style, you know, isn't as good as like whatever, like, you know, whatever right. you want to throw out there. But I actually really, I mean, the art in this book goes a long way. Anyway, continue. You were ripping off Batman the Animated. I apologize, but yes. I love the look of it.
Yeah. I mean, and that kind of gets into what I was wanted to say is that like, it's there. I feel like there's still a lot for these characters, for their relationship as far as that kind of Dark Knight detective kind of story that's not so dark that it's, you know, completely shrouded in shadow, as it were, metaphorically and literally, as we're talking about the art. But there's still a lot of stories to tell in that way. And also the other reason why, you know, I wouldn't necessarily rule out continuing on the Schneider and Caprica story is because Alyssa is just amazing. Like her art yeah. is just amazing. I'm really doing everything I can to try to continue working with her because I'm so excited, not just with the work that she creates, but her work ethic is incredible. I feel like our relationship has gotten really good with our communication. She's 11 time zones away. She's in Florence, Italy.
Oh,
we've only
wow.
ever spoken on the phone once. Everything else is through email. English is her second language. And it's just been totally seamless communication. One time I had to look up the Italian word for hickey for my other book, Love at First Bite, but like that didn't bump her at all. It's just been a real pleasure working with her. So for those two reasons, I definitely wouldn't rule out coming back to this story or coming back to these characters.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have to say that I really enjoyed the art. I opened it up and I was like, I like this. Like, I'm a fan of this. And, you know, I read through the whole story and I was like, this is a really nice little book. It's interesting how you get into, you know, certain issues of like, I mean, I don't want to get too political here, but like torture or, you know, there's a little bit in there of like using forceful techniques to get like some sort of like confession out of somebody. And, you know, you have the main human character sort of like crossing the line a little bit, and the dog being like, you shouldn't do that. And there's a really nice, you know, to your writing, there's a really nice bit here where and I'm sorry, this sounds a little silly when I say it, where the dog says to the human, you know, has a nice little conversation where it's like, I'm your partner, you know, like we're together in this. Like that was a really nice piece of writing that I felt was that kind of solidified the character's relationship and added a bit of warmth to the story as a whole. So it's not just the art. The writing is quite good, too.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I know the scene that you're talking about. I was really going for, like I said, in my ripoff of Batman the Animated Series, it is kind of a Bruce and Alfred relationship where, you know, Alfred is in a lot of ways, not just in the show, but in comics lore, like one of the people that pulls Bruce back from the edge.
Sure.
Where he will, if not for Robin or Batgirl or Nightwing or Alfred pulling him back, he will lose himself to Batman in a lot of ways. And that's always kind of one of the interesting questions that I find, because I'm a huge Batman fan. That's always one of the interesting questions I find about that character.
Yeah.
So thank you for saying that. I'm glad that I was able to hit that note correctly on the story. I really appreciate that.
No, I want to get to the Batman fan thing in a second, but the question that one of the questions I really want to ask, why do only dogs talk? Do other animals talk? What about the cats, Gabe? What about cat? I hate cats, which is really funny because my comic book is about cats and I can't stand cats. I lived with cats for 10 years. I'm allergic. I can't have it. But anyway, go on.
I had some friends, I had some friends and some people that have come up to me at conventions and stuff being like, are you going to like have cats talk? You're going to have cat characters. And I'm like, maybe, because I was still kind of writing. I had the script written, but then I was rewriting the fourth chapter and the third chapter before we produced them. And I was like, he's like, maybe like I can get a cat character in there. Maybe like, you know, I can do it. And then like it just never presented itself.
Sure.
So I could have shoehorned one in and it would have been kind of lame, or I could have just left it as was. So the answer is honestly is very unsatisfying, which is I never thought about it. I never thought like, okay, how far does this go? Are horses talking? Are cows
really?
Talking?
You never thought like, about that? That's amazing.
Because the story never really called for it. So it's like, All right. So because if I needed a cat, then I would need to think about, okay, like
cats, Gabe. Nobody, just kidding. No, anyway, go on.
Well, they're your listeners. You can alienate them all.
Yeah, exactly. It's my podcast.
I'm not a cat person. I'm very much a dog person.
I can tell. I think, yeah.
But you know, the story of For Molly and Into the Wilderness too is about loyalty, and it is about abandonment, and it is about friendship, and it is about all these things that kind of come up in not only our relationships with other humans, but in our relationships with dogs.
Yeah.
So it's the, you know, one of the questions of it is For Molly, not necessarily Into the Wilderness, is, you know, what does the dog teach you about loyalty?
Sure.
And trust and things like that. So, because I've never had that experience with a cat, I've never really been around cats. I don't have an answer for that. I didn't find a way to include them. And because of that, I didn't really think of the backstory. I will say, though, that birds are not able to talk in the
really?
Because there's
well,
a
they're
bird.
Not mammals, Gabe.
That's part of it. They don't have lips. But yeah, so there's a bird that briefly comes and is able to, it communicates via a squawk with Molly in chapter one, but does not have the ability to talk.
Or maybe birds just never wanted to talk to you, Gabe. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
No.
That's probably it. And they certainly don't want to talk to dogs.
No, well, you talked a little bit about Batman, the animated series, and Batman in general. I mean, and you talked a little bit about your sort of journey into making comics and like moving from teaching and wanting to sort of get into writing for the entertainment industry. How did you discover comics? Have you been a comics fan for a long time? You review comics for Fanbase Press. So I'm assuming that there is a knowledge base there. So how did you get into comics? Like, is it something that you were always into or?
I was kind of a late bloomer in comics, actually.
Okay.
I read some comics when I was a kid, but mm-hmm. I didn't read a lot. My first introduction to Batman actually was the Batman Returns Super Nintendo game.
Really?
Which I'm really bad at video games, so I never got very far past the first couple of levels where you're fighting the Red Triangle gang or Red Triangle Circus gang in the streets.
Uh-huh.
Never got very far past that level.
Uh-huh.
I bet I could find it on YouTube and watch the cutscenes just so I can
sure.
find
cheat,
out
cheat.
What happened.
Yeah,
to that
exactly.
Yeah. So when I was a little kid, the video game led to the movies, led to the animated series, talking strictly Batman.
Yeah.
And that was how far it went for a while. And then in college, I had a friend give me some Batman books, and it was The Long Halloween, the Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale book. And so that was kind of where I got hooked. And because it was like, okay, this is a more mature book. It has more of the noir elements that I love.
Mm-hmm.
It's more in depth with the characters. You know, you're hearing Batman's thoughts. You're seeing his relationships with other people, whether it's Robin or Catwoman or Jim Gordon or the villains and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's getting deeper into the characters. I think that Jeff Loeb is just great about, especially in that book, about getting really to the heart of that character.
Yeah.
And the people around him. And from there it kind of took off. I haven't had a lot of time to read books recently.
Mm.
Because it's not so much the time thing. It's that like it was just way too much screen time for
sure.
me, because I read books digitally. I read them on my Amazon Kindle.
You're one of those.
And I was just like, yeah, yeah. And so I was just like staring at my computer all day during work from home. And then I was like watching TV or looking at something on my phone, looking at social media and then reading on the screen. I was just like, I was getting headaches and I was just like, this is just too much. So I've been reading some paper books. I recently picked up The Wind Through the Keyhole, which is one of the Dark Tower books from Stephen King. Because I read The Dark Tower when I was a kid. I read like 19 Stephen King books when I was in high school.
Oh, wow.
Back into Stephen King.
So you're a Stephen King fan, I would imagine.
Yeah, very much so.
A horror or just Stephen King?
Just Stephen King. I haven't read a lot of his horror. I've read The Shining. I've read Carrie, The Stand. Well, The Stand isn't so much horror.
It is. It freaked the hell out of me when I first read it. Oh, no, go ahead.
There's a lot of scary parts in The Stand too. But I, when I read this, The Shining, I literally like could not sleep like on some of the nights when I was reading The Shining. It was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life. Well, what book were you going to say?
No. I was going to say it wasn't a Stephen King thing, but whenever somebody mentions The Stand, I always, there's this writer, Robert McCannon, I want to say. I can never get the name right. Again, terrible with names. But there's this book called Swan Song, which is like one of my favorite books of all time. And it's better than The Stand. Like, and this,
all right.
Yeah. And this is a guy who writes the same sort of stuff, like kind of Stephen King, but I think he's, at least the stuff that I've read of his, he's better than Stephen King. Like, I love his stuff. And so Swan Song is a bit like The Stand, but it takes place like in a nuclear apocalypse, like nuclear world thing. And it's one of these big, thick books, you know. And unlike Stephen King's, not to insult you or Stephen King or anyone else out there, it just didn't peter out at the end, like for me, like a lot of King's books did. And I have to reread it at some point, but I haven't found time to sit down with a 1,000-page book. So, I would highly recommend picking that up if you wanted something in that vein. I absolutely loved it, but no,
That sounds cool.
I love Stephen King too. So that's I'm also just like a horror fan. So that's why I was wondering, is it horror as a genre or is it just Stephen King? So, but it sounds like you answered that.
No, I'm a big scaredy cat. I don't watch horror movies. Yeah, I don't read horror books. That's why I've avoided It and Cujo and those and Pet Sematary. Some of his
you can keep avoiding really It. You don't have to read It. I'll tell you right now. I've said it before on the podcast. When I read It as a kid, I was not a big reader, like a big, you know, I wasn't. I read comic books and for some reason books, but I did read several Stephen King ones, and it was the first like hunk of book, like 1,000 pages where I was like, I'm going to read this. And then they got to a point, and I won't say what it is. Anyone who's read It will know. But where they discover, like, it physically manifests itself as something at the end. And I was like, that's it? Like, that's all? I was like, I've just read 750 pages of this book, and this is what you gave me? And so I was very upset. I was very mad at Stephen King. But it took
I mean, Stephen King, I do read Stephen King with my eyes wide open, where it's like, okay, this this might end in an ending that is a little bit unsatisfactory or, like, a little – like, I loved – Under the Dome, but the ending of that was a little unsatisfactory.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, if you're interested in like The Stand and some of his other big ensemble books, like I would say read Under the Dome because it's a fun kind of journey. But I was a little bit disappointed in the end of that. But I will say at the beginning of the pandemic, I read 11/22/63, his book about the time traveling, going back in time to try to stop the JFK assassination. That one was really good. I really liked that one. And the ending did not disappoint.
Okay, I'm going to have to pick that up because I think the last King book that I read was several years ago, and it's called Cell, which is like his zombie thing. And it's like cell phone sent out a signal and turned everyone. And it was, that was amazing. Like I have to say, like, I loved that book. Like I picked it up just like you with open eyes and thinking like, okay, we'll see how this goes. I just want something to read that will be fun. And I do tend to sort of like zombie books and I'm a zombie fanatic. Yeah. So I was just like, Stephen King's never to me really written a zombie. And he just did an amazing job of like taking the cell phone and, well, I think it's scary anyway, but making it more scary than just Google spying on you or Amazon telling you what to buy on Facebook and stuff like that.
Right.
So, No, but that's great. That's good stuff to know. But that's the thing though, is that reading your book, I mean, it's not horror, but there are elements of like I read into it, like sort of apocalypse fiction, like I thought it was like an sort of like end of the world society. And I understand that you're saying like it's a hidden thing, but there are elements of like you had said The Stand wasn't necessarily scary, but to someone like me and this past year, even leading up to it, I mean, I grew up in the 80s. So I was like terrified of like nuclear war and pandemics and stuff like that. That's the sort of Mad Max sort of stuff, you know, The Day After, things like that terrified me. I would have nightmares. So like reading your story, even though you may not have intended it to necessarily be scary, and I'm not saying that it's horror, but I will say that there is that sort of like sheen of, you know, like, oh, they're survivalists. They have to survive on their own. And there's not a lot of help out there. You know, am I making any sense?
No, that I really appreciate you saying that, honestly. And that's the reason why it's called Into the Wilderness, because it is about it's elements that I attempted to borrow from the Western, which I love as a genre. Uh-huh. And it's like we're out here on our own. Like we're the peacekeepers, but the two advocates. But like there's not like a very like set disciplined society like out here. We're on our own, and like we and we're trying to navigate this world where it is pretty lawless. It is, yeah. You know, we have these rules that like don't have a gun and don't have explosives, but on the first three pages there's a gun and there's an explosion. Like I was trying to capture that feeling of this is a loose society, but it's not civilization. It's not a city. It's not industry coming to the West, as it were. It's not the railroad coming into the West and symbolizing progress. Like we're like, it's, I wanted it to feel like, okay, we're out here on our own.
Yeah.
And you can, and getting back to, you know, what we were talking about with, you know, the whole relationship of, you know, going too far and using excessive force. It's like, you could go off of the rails and there's nobody to stop you.
Yeah.
You know, like you're wearing the badge of the advocates, but, there's nothing to stop you from being cruel and being mean and being hurtful and doing all these things. It's just, and that's what, like you're saying, like with that scene, it's just you and me out here.
Yeah.
Like, and we are trying to, we have a mission, we have a goal, we are fighting for something. But if we lose sight of that, if we lose sight of our code of honor, our code of justice, then we become what we are trying to hunt.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, the tagline is, fight the darkness or become it.
Yeah.
Because the title is out here into the wilderness, because they're out there on their own.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so, that's anyway, very Batman, I really too, isn't you. It?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you.
No, I
really
mean,
appreciate that you were able to pick that out of the story. You know, sight unseen, you haven't read Formali, we haven't spoken before this, so that's very gratifying. Thank you.
No, I mean, like I said, it's a great story. It's a great little spinoff and everything, and it's great how you address like the heroic code and stuff like that. I mean, I you mentioned the explosions, and that was one of the things that I really liked too, because I mean, about like 2 years ago, I went to Europe with I went to the UK and France with my daughter, went on like a field trip like for the Model United Nations in her school, and I met some people who are friends of the podcast, have been on the podcast, I was friendly with, I had lunch with them, and we were just talking, and it may have come up in an interview with them on the podcast where they were talking about like that unexploded ordnance from like World War II still shows up like to this day in the UK. And I was like, oh no, you're talking about the Princess Diana thing like in Africa, right? And they're like, no, here in the UK, like they will like be digging and there will be and I was like, what? And I was like, still?
I saw something on Reddit there was one like this week.
Oh, really?
The last 2 weeks, I saw something on Reddit. They're like, there's something out in a field that they had to explode. They had to evacuate a certain area, and there's drone footage of that blowing up, and it was a big explosion.
Oh,
and it
wow.
was like, wow, that's been sitting in the ground for 80 years. Like, I'm sorry, but I interrupted, but yeah.
No, hell, I've been interrupting you this whole podcast. I'm the rude one. but I have to ask questions, right? the thing that I wanted to ask, because I mean, you mentioned Batman, the animated series a couple of times, and that definitely is sort of the look that is in the book. Is that what you sought out when you started creating your comics? Or was it just like a happy accident, or, you know, was it like, oh, I love this sort of style so much that that's what I want for my comics?
It was kind of a happy accident, I would say. It was just when I was doing Love at First Bite.
Which I got to talk about that, but go on.
Yeah, I was doing Love at First Bite last year. It was my second self-published comic. It was my second opportunity to hire an artist. I went on Upwork, which is the freelancer website, and I put up a posting for an artist, and Elisa responded. And I mean, she sent me a brief portfolio and she had a link to her website. And I was just like, well, this is her. Like, I got to get this woman to do my art. And it works so well with Love at First Bite. And then I didn't give her too much direction because I love her style so much with Into the Wilderness, except like, okay, like I want thicker, thicker outlines. I want more blacks, and I want really dark shadows, dark colors, and things like that. So it was kind of a happy accident, but it is very much like I'm so pleased that she responded to my posting and that I've been able to work with her on two comics now. And I'm trying to work with her on as many comics as possible because I just really, really love her art style.
Yeah, no, I love it too. I mean, I think it's really great. I mean, like you said, there's a lot of darks and there's a lot of like thick outlines and stuff like that. Stuff that we associated with that sort of like Bruce Timm sort of like animated style, but here it works really well because, I mean, not that the Bruce Timm animated style doesn't work well in any, I mean, the guy's a genius as far as I'm concerned, but there are artists who try to sort of like mimic that, or not saying that Alyssa's doing that because she's not, it's very much her own style too, but that fail miserably. And she has not, she has like incredibly succeeded in my opinion.
I completely agree. She's amazing.
So wait, let me ask you about Love at First Bite, because the comic is, I mean, the only reason that I kind of chuckle when I say that is when I hear Love at First Bite, there's an old George Hamilton movie called Love at First Bite that is a parody of like vampire stuff. And so when I saw the title, I was like, I just got to ask him about this. Did you know about the George Hamilton movie when you came up with the title, or is it just...
I looked it up after and I was like, whoops.
The whole thing, somebody put that whole movie up on, I need to rewatch it on YouTube. Like somebody put the whole, which is very bad of you, but you can't find it streaming anywhere else. So, but no, I mean, I don't want to get it confused with that, because obviously your book is not a spinoff of the George Hamilton movie, but what is Love at First Bite for listeners who have not heard of your book?
Well, it's a it's another one shot I did. It's available on Comixology and Amazon. It's about a capricious young woman named Alina who decides to get back at her ex-boyfriend by becoming a vampire and rubbing his face in it.
Oh, so, nice.
Yeah, that's a romantic comedy parody with vampires. It was me trying to, after writing For Molly, which is a very heavy subject matter and is a very long book, trying to write a short form humor book.
Sure.
Something with some comedy trying to show off kind of, you know, and also I've spent like I said, the last couple of years talking about Futurama and saying like, this is funny, this isn't funny. Well, it's like, well, who are you to say that? You've never written a comedy. And it's like, all right, well, I guess I got to do that voice in my head.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a lot of fun to do. That was it's funny you bring up the title thing, because I feel like I stretched the taffy as far as I could with all of the vampire puns that I was using.
Oh, nice.
I was like, well, I can call it Love at First Bite, or I could not use the pun, and you know, but if I wanted to use the pun, that's pretty much what I needed to do. But sure. I came up with in Love at First Bite, there's a cupcake food truck that one of the characters visits, and it's called Count Snackula.
Uh-huh.
So it's a vampire themed cupcake food truck that's also vegan.
Okay, I don't know how that works, but I was going to say, is there blood in all the cupcakes, or?
No, because it's vegan. It's for human consumption.
Got you.
But so I had to come up with, I didn't have to, but I made a menu magnet for one of the Kickstarter rewards. So it's a little magnet that advertises Count Snackula, and it has all their featured cupcakes on it. And so all their featured cupcakes are different vampire puns, like Vanilla and, oh God, I don't have it right in front of me and I've forgotten them all, but it's like, Straw Bloody, Vanilla, Funfetti Bite Day Cake, things like that. So I really like exhausted all the vampire puns, and
that's awesome.
And so that's where Love at First Bite kind of came from. And then, as I said, I saw that there was a movie about it, and I was like, ah, I guess I'm first.
That's what, yeah, you always got to look up the title first. That's what I try and do if I come up with an idea. But I mean, we talked a little bit about your, I've almost had you on for an hour, and I don't want to suck up your whole afternoon, but I mean, we talked a little bit about how you discovered Batman and Batman comics and stuff, but how did your love for comics sort of develop into, I want to make my own? Because obviously making comics is not necessarily the easiest or the most profitable or, you know, thing that you're ever going to do. What sucked you into wanting to make comic books?
It was, I listened to your interview with David Dweck, I think his name,
or
Dwatch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you talked about two things that kind of relate to this, which is, I originally wrote For Molly as a screenplay, because that's kind of what I did in my, my free time when I was a teacher.
Yeah.
And I converted it. I thought like, oh, I'll just, you know, do a comic and change it into a comic. That'll be a thing I can do. And it'll be kind of where I'll start off on my career, whether it's, and then that will take me to writing for movies or writing for TV.
Yeah.
And honestly, like doing that, going through that process and rewriting the script for a comic, it really made me appreciate the comics medium even more and really fall in love with it even more.
What was it? What was it that made you fall in love with it more, like in the writing process? Because I know that,
and yeah.
Oh no, go ahead.
That was the other thing that he said on that that podcast that you did, was that it's like it's making a movie with unlimited budget.
Yeah.
And it's like the only limit is your imagination and really your understanding of page flow and things like that and layout. But it's like but I just loved the freedom of it. Yeah. I loved the storytelling potential of it, the sounds and the smells and the actions and all the things that you can create in your reader's head.
Yeah.
You know, if you are presenting it in the right way, if you are putting the quote unquote camera in the right spot to get the angle right, to if you're putting the layouts correctly, if you're I'm a big fan of the silent panel of like just two characters staring at each other, you know, whether it's to emphasize like a funny point or a dramatic point. It's like the things that you can do in this medium are so unique to the medium and so fun as far as storytelling potential.
Yeah.
And I just loved it. And it was like, it was like finding this thing that I've been writing short stories, and I even wrote like a crappy little novel when I was in high school. Like I've been doing this writing stuff my whole life, but it was when I started to write For Molly and rethink it for a comic medium, that was like, it all kind of clicked into place. And it's like, oh, this is what I love.
Sure.
And so now, like with Love at First Bite, with Into the Wilderness, with all these short stories that I've written during the pandemic, I'm really like, I'm just loving writing for comics.
Oh, that's great.
I have a laminated page of different panels, panel layouts that you could do on a page. And I just look at that as I'm writing. I'm trying to figure out like what fits into what panels and like how do I need to pace it and what's my page turn at the end of it. And it's just, it's so much fun. And it's so, and of course working with artists is so great. And that collaboration between two people and like having the script be like, I mean, my scripts for Molly are letters to Ben, where I'm like, Ben, this is like what's in my brain. Can you please make this for me? You know?
Uh-huh.
And it's like, and that kind of that experience is so unique and the product is so unique. I just love it so much.
Oh, that's cool. That's awesome. Well, that's great. No, I mean, I think that's fantastic. And obviously, at least with Into the Wilderness, I mean, you've done a great job here. I'm gonna have to check out For Molly. You know, I'm going to contribute to your Kickstarter, obviously, because
thank you so much.
So now I'll have to check out your other stuff and just give you more money. Jeez, Gabe, come on, twist my arm. No, but this is great. I mean, and I'm like I said, people, check it out. It's on Kickstarter. It's Into the Wilderness. I mean, it's just a great, fun little spinoff, like a self-contained story. And you don't I mean, I at least didn't need to know anything about Formali. I mean, I found out that it existed after I read this, and I was like, oh, okay, the dogs talk, and that's fine. But I mean, I think this is a really nice, well-drawn, nicely paced story, and I think you've done a great job. And I mean, you know, what else can I say but that?
I mean, that's perfect, and thank you so much for saying that. I really appreciate it.
No,
I'm so happy to be bringing this story to Kickstarter, and you know, I just really appreciate the support. Thank you.
No, absolutely. So people will go to Kickstarter and search for Into the Wilderness, and that will lead you to the campaign, and just throw as much money as you can at it. You know, we want to see it come out, and you know, this looks like a great book. And quite honestly, I mean, I know you sort of kind of want to like wrap it all up and have this be, but I would love to see more of this. So I'm just like, okay, just throw him a lot of money so he can't turn his. But in any case, Gabe, I really appreciate you coming on to this podcast, and I cannot apologize enough for yesterday. It is like literally I don't know, maybe there's another interviewee out there who's like, no, you forgot me that one time. But honestly, I am so sorry. It just like stuff happened at my house, and the morning was crazy, and then the afternoon happened, and I was like, oh my God. So I cannot apologize enough for missing our first, you know, chat. Or scheduled chat.
Apology accepted. I really appreciate you rescheduling and us figuring this out. Like I'm glad that we were able to make it work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, the book is Into the Wilderness, and the writer is Gabe Cheng, and your website is GabeChengComics.com, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
And you can see all his stuff there. And again, it's Kickstarter Into the Wilderness. It's Gabe Cheng, and it's a great book. Throw your money at it. And this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. Cannot forget that name. And you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that wonderful stuff. And our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thank you for listening. Check it out. Check out Into the Wilderness on Kickstarter. And we will be back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing. I'm doing part-time. Part-timefanboy.com.